Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. Happy Mondays. We're opening Jackson, Mississippi, Mississippi, America, in the midst of a pandemic and all of the news happening regarding Minneapolis situation. But thank God the officer was arrested on Friday. But oh my God, look, we're dealing with riots, uprising of America, meaning it's a world uprising between the leader of the world. But good morning, may God grant us the words to speak out. So we have law enforcement experts. I'm just cutting to the chase. You know, usually I do a lot of small talk, but we have a special caller, our special guest from late Saturday night. Law enforcement expert Juan Cloyd is online. My apologies for the delay. There was a situation with my hosting number. Could not get it right. Made a cup of coffee and sat down 5 minutes before showtime and a situation with my PIN number. So apologies. I need to set up the call-in earlier so we can definitely spend on time because time is important. So I do respect Mr. Juan's time and your time also. So happy Monday. It's on national news. Mississippi is practically opening completely up. I'm in the middle of quarantine, so my life activities are restricted. But we are opening up. How do you feel about that? It's a lot to talk about. There's a spike in COVID-19 cases. I heard that someone had partied in Florida last week on May the 24th, 25th, that was with COVID-19 because they bar hopped. I don't know. I know Mississippi's on the list of, I think this past week has been our worst weekend. I have my thoughts and opinions, but definitely want to hear yours and definitely want to hear how our law enforcement expert, Juan Cloyd, who shares so much, and I've been resharing that broadcast, would love to find out how he's feeling about it. And also, he will provide advice to us how we should really carry ourselves and not become so emotional. These are emotional situations that we're going through regarding our health, regarding humanity. This is basically George Floyd case is a humanity case. In my eyes, Juan, what type of case that you've been a law enforcement officer? And Juan is with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know I'm just trying to cut to the chase, but how do you view this case? Is it humanity or is it a hate crime, humanity? How do you categorize?
Oh, I definitely categorize it as humanity, first of all, because we're all human, right?
Right.
We're different races, different views, but we're still human, first of all, right? So that's the first crime. It's a crime against humanity. And then you can go into the color and religion, the gender, rather, but so it's a crime against humanity. And when we sit back and watch these crimes take place against all of us and we debate and people have their thoughts, I think the biggest thing, even my thoughts, you know, the biggest thing is we put a lot of energy in our thoughts, but they're my thoughts. They're all thoughts. And everybody has a different thought. So respectfully, I think, as I use the word, I think that we should take a step back and a breath and just really sit back and look at people's circumstances, what brought them certain places, right? You know, how they became, how did one person get from point A to point B? What led them to that path rather than just looking at that person and saying, hey, there's a drug addict or hey, there's a prostitute. And then we label them
right.
Prostitutes, crackheads, or whatever, and we put a label on them and we dehumanize them rather than saying that's William or that's Sarah. We give them a label so it makes us feel better to dehumanize each other, right?
Right.
So those are all things that I think we need to take a step back and start realizing that's what we do as humans too.
Like on Saturday night, you mentioned law enforcement officers that sometimes feel like they're not viewed as human.
Right, right. Because they say cops. People say cops, right? The police. Like, every police officer is the police. Like the police don't have children. We don't have families. We sleep in our uniform. We eat in our uniform. We sleep in our cars, and then we're activated like a robot, and then we go and we police. You know? And that's why I've said this for a couple of years. I want to change the term from law enforcement because, number one, it sounds, the sound of it is terrible, law enforcement, anything that's enforced.
Right, because enforce the law, yeah. What would you like to change it to?
Right, my job is not to enforce the law. Right. My job as a police officer is to police the area and to make sure that things are quote unquote in order, but also to protect people who can't protect themselves, not just property, right? Not to protect your property, right? Protect and serve. And it's definitely not to protect your property to the point of violence. Those are all things that I think that the culture of policing has been, that I know that the culture of policing has been, it was started doing, and this was years ago, and now 2020, we're still doing the same thing. So this is one of prostitution is the oldest profession. And I beg to differ. I think policing is probably the oldest profession, and it has not changed.
Right.
Just like
that's a good point. Because in history, I'm a history buff. That's a good point because I'm a history buff, as you know. And there's always somebody enforcing the law.
Right.
In the battle, the law is being enforced.
Exactly. So, we've got a long way to go. We have to take baby steps, and that's why I agreed to speak this morning, because we've got some changes that we have to do federally and locally with how our police are hired, how they're trained, how they're retained, how they're fired, and we have some major work to do. And I think the biggest thing that frustrates me the most, at least for me, right, just for my career and then even where I am now, is that the fact that I see it happening. If I'm not right there at that particular department, I'm talking to somebody at another department who's experiencing something that you just couldn't believe that you were hearing or seeing, right? Like here in the city.
And we're talking nationwide, listeners. He works and travels national and international, in some cases, I believe, training officers.
Right. So, let me go ahead and give a quick background, because I always say when I'm speaking to students that I'm training, I always get your instructor's background. What did he or she do? Because they could have just read up on stuff to inform themselves and never really experienced things. So really quickly, I live in Jackson, Mississippi. I work for the Jackson Police Department. Is the largest police department, or maybe was the largest police department in the country. I mean, in the state. Jackson is the capital city of Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
I worked.
It better be still the largest in the capital city.
I don't think it's the largest anymore in the state.
Oh my God.
We almost have zero police.
Oh.
Yeah. But anyway,
right.
That's a story for another day. I worked for 17 years with them. I worked in robbery, homicide, violent crime task force, street level narcotics, regular narcotics as a detective, background investigations. I was a police union president for 9 years. I worked for the FBI as a task force member, full-time task force member for 9 years. I worked pretty much every major crime that you could think of, kidnappings, cartel member kidnappings, high profile homicide, cold case murders. And then I was able to attend the coveted FBI undercover school where I received my certification and did some undercover work across the country. And then finally I was I went to another department to be an assistant chief, an interim chief, where I learned the administrative side of policing for 3 years, and was able to, you know, see and experience quite a few things from a different lens in policing. And then received my trainers, my law enforcement trainer certification in 2000. I'm a firearm instructor. I'm a law enforcement training instructor. I have my own training business. And then here recently, in the past 3 years, I worked for a company out of D.C. where we travel the country training police officers on how to have more positive interactions with the public and youth in particular. So me and my team train Sacramento Police Department, Compton, California, Norman, Oklahoma, Lewiston and Auburn, Maine, Tampa, Florida, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Adams County, Mississippi, and a couple other places. So, yeah, just in that itself, I was able to gain quite a bit of experience and insight on what other departments do, what other chiefs and command staffs do, and then finally what the officers on the street do. Because part of the program was for us to ride along with the officers, see what they experience, and also sit and interview young people between the ages of 14 and 25 on what they thought about the police in their area and the experiences that they had. So I guess I'm only 54, but I feel like I've lived like I'm 154. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know what I'm thinking. When will the book? I'm thinking, when will the book be released? I cannot wait to read the book.
I think my mind is I've forgotten so much that I get I'll be driving and I'll remember something crazy that me and my partner did or something that happened. I'm like, wow, that was really crazy, you know. And
so I know the few undercover stories that I have heard have just been like off the chain, like what?
Yeah, and then even the people that I've talked to, you know, as quiet as it's kept, this is really quiet. I'm just gonna say this. There are people in this country that are undercover agents for the CIA and the FBI. Man, I'm telling you, the things that they have done would boggle your mind to keep the country safe or to keep people safe. You know, they put themselves and lives in harm's way, and it's a silent profession. Like, when you're in that profession, you don't go around telling folks, hey, I'm an undercover for the FBI, and this is what I just did. You know, I just disrupted a terrorist group, right? This happens all the time. This happens all the time. I disrupted a group of rogue police officers. You know, we had one guy that was my classmate that did that. He experienced quite a bit that really, really kind of was stressful to him. So, yeah, it's quite a few.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like in the military, your work is classified. You cannot discuss it with no one. So that
right.
I know that can be very stressful. Wow.
Yeah. So, I guess let's get to the point in hand. Let's talk about what's going on now and the fact that I've been up just about all night watching the civil uprising.
I know. You know something I noticed from yesterday? Different than the other days of riots. Maybe they listened to us late Saturday night, law enforcement and the police, those that are police, change language, right? Those are policing and protecting and protesting. Something that I noticed, and I'm sure you noticed, how the law enforcement professionals and the protesters are embracing each other. You know, they're being disruptive, but there are some that are, they're reaching out. I've seen overnight this early this morning as I was preparing for the show and watching the videos, and you and I tag each other and stuff. I've seen some videos where law enforcement is standing their hand out to the protesters to shake their hand, hugs, embraces, just, you know, talking to each other like, hey, the protesters are human and the law enforcement officers are human. So I noticed that. I had noticed that on the other days, but I noticed that on yesterday, that they're like, what you all out here doing, what you're doing, we're out here doing our work, and so let's do our best to get along. So out of all the craziness and the burning of vehicles and looting, destroying people, businesses that people worked hard for, also I've seen a positive side where, you know, they're trying their best to make it. Some are trying to keep it peaceful. Thank God they're keeping it peaceful here in Jackson, Mississippi, because Lord knows we don't need anything burned or destroyed here in Jackson. So applaud those protesters that we have had about this ordeal, and especially on yesterday, hell day. And I tagged you. I figured you might have been down now, but I tagged you. And you know what I noticed? That it was more percentage of non-black protesting in the capital of Jackson, Mississippi, than black.
Right, right. And that's kind of what it's going to take, because we only make up, 13% of the population in the country, to my knowledge. And, you know, so obviously we're not the majority. But again, we're human. And we've got to be able to have other people, other races, respond with empathy and be able to, you know, stand beside us, because what happens in my neighborhood, as in the crack cocaine epidemic that destroys the black family structure, right?
Just
decimated the black family structure in the 80s and the 90s. And now you see the opioid epidemic, right? The heroin, the methamphetamine.
Yeah.
It's just destroying the Caucasian family. It's just destroying them, right? And so these young babies, these children, end up in foster care, end up as wards of the state. And that's a whole nother discussion for another day, or another 100 days, of how foster care homes, unfortunately, some of them at least, improperly treat these young kids. And there's a study that was out, came out about the likelihood of children that have been placed in five or more foster care homes, they're 80% likely to end up in prison. So there's a foster care to prison pipeline as well. And, you know, as quiet as it gets, you know, I have six adopted children, and have one little fella laying next to me now that was, his mother was in foster care, and we haven't adopted him, but we might as well. I'm his pawpaw now. He pretty much runs me and my family on a daily basis, right? And so the bottom line is,
I haven't seen any of your Facebook lives recently, but I know what I have seen. Yeah. He is running things.
Oh yeah,
definitely you.
Yeah, and so I can't look at him or anybody else. He's not my blood, so I can't. I don't care about him. You know, I don't understand how. This is me personally. I don't understand how people do that. You know, you see a child. I don't care what color they are. You know, you see a child in pain, in need of help, you help the child.
Right.
And so now, where we had hundreds of thousands of little black children needing help,
because it still takes a village, right? Some people tend to forget it still takes a village.
Yeah.
If you have kids or not, like I have, you know, lost a child, but I have, you know, kids. I love kids. I would love to be like Janet Jackson and have a baby, but I love kids. And just because a person does not have kids, do not think they do not love kids. And it takes a village. It takes all of us to take care of our kids, to take care of our kids. Bottom line.
Right. It takes all of us. You know, Papa gets tired.
I know. It's like you get. I know the Facebook lives I have seen. I'm like, oh God! I mean, he just turned Mr. Bad Law Enforcement police officer into a teddy bear.
Yeah, he does. He does. he does. So, but anyway, so let's just talk about what you had me on to talk about for. And,
okay. We do have callers, but I don't want to call to introduce. Would you like to say something, caller? Would you like to introduce yourself and state where you're calling from and what you would like to make a comment about? Or if you have any questions for police enforcement, what's the name? We're creating a new name. Let's call it a new name. Policing experts, police. I want to think of something like really, really awesome that we can hashtag. Policing guru.
Yeah.
Right. Caller, would you like to make a comment or ask a question? Maybe just listening. Okay. Because if you have any comments or questions, definitely would like to hand you the mic. Okay, we can resume.
Are you
talking?
Talking to me?
Oh, okay, yes. How are you? I'm Beth, a.k.a. Be True here at Cut the Shark Entertainment Reports, and we have guest law enforcement expert Juan Clore on call, and we're talking about the hot topic. So would you like to make a comment or ask a question?
No, I'm just listening from Seattle, and I think that Mr. Cloy is an extremely wise man.
Mr. Cloy?
Well, thank you.
Calling from Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, Washington.
Shout out to Seattle.
I'm probably in my neighborhood.
Have you trained there before?
Seattle.
Have you trained there before?
Yeah,
I have always wanted to.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Got close to going. So I always wanted to go and will definitely end up going before I leave this earth. I just like that whole vibe. It reminds me of when I was young growing up in Indiana. But, but definitely appreciate y'all listening. Because in Seattle, I think are you guys 3 hours? What time is it in Seattle?
It's 10 after 5 a.m., more or less.
Yeah. Oh. So it's early.
Well, thank you for waking up early. Thank you for drinking coffee with us. Seattle is one of my favorite cities, too, that I've never been to, and I definitely would love to. I'm like you, Juan. I've always wanted to, like, oh, my God, I would love to go to Seattle. I probably would want to stay there if I ever traveled there.
Yeah.
You
so
all doing pretty
like
good
Seattle.
There?
It's hard to understand you. The broadcast is pretty staticky and broken up, so I'm not sure what you said.
Okay, I noticed that. I'm trying to clear it up a little. Is everything okay in Seattle? What's the big news today in Seattle?
Well, I'm actually in a small town outside of Seattle called Bremerton, and Bremerton is kind of a military town. There's a navy ship repair place here, so there's lots of military people around and lots of conservatives. And of course, we're locked down because of the COVID. So I haven't actually been in the community. I've just been reading things on the internet. Seattle has had a lot of demonstrations, the same as across the United States. There are a lot of people that I'm a white person. There's a lot of white people that are beginning that their understanding of racism is going deeper than it has been all these years, which is why we still have these problems. And I think a lot of white people are beginning, but still have a lot of work to do to understand how deep the racism in our country goes. And when Juan talks about the children, I certainly agree with him. The children are our future, and if we don't provide for adequate education, adequate nutrition, this kind of problem just won't go away.
Right.
Yeah. And you want, if you want to get me really going and get my blood pressure going, start talking about children, and I start thinking about the money that administrators make for public schools, right, but they can't figure out or won't figure out how to properly feed children at school.
Yeah.
Or feed them at all. That really just, you know, it just boggles my mind to see that you got a guy making 250 or 300 grand down south a year and wearing really nice $500 shoes, and they walk into school where kids barely have shoes. I cannot. That makes absolutely no sense. Right. It's ridiculous. But I guess the most mind-boggling part of it is we let it happen. So, you know, I guess, you know, they always say whatever you let people do, they're going to do. And until you decide to stop it from happening, you know, then you're just part of the problem. You're, as the chief in Minnesota said, you're complicit. So we're complicit.
Right.
We think things. We can talk all day. We can talk all day about everything under the sun, but we see that we believe truly is immoral and going on. But if we don't do anything about it, we're just talking. We're just wasting air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're supplying a lot of carbon monoxide for the trees. So, you know, something's amiss with. I think this is the time we need to take a step back with the quarantine for sure. And this is all by design, and I'm not saying by man's design, right? And but this is all, I think, a spiritual design to have you sit back. Well, what are the odds of us having a quarantine? Watch this. What are the odds of us having a quarantine, a worldwide quarantine, and then on top of that, being able to view a man's death? Right, by someone who was supposed to protect that person. And then on top of that, the country is in uproar, along with a controversial president. What are the odds of that? All happening at the same time, at the same exact time.
Absolutely.
Right.
Everything is connected.
Right,
what were you saying? I don't know if you would like to provide your name or not, but our friend from Seattle. And what were you saying?
Oh, my name is Mary.
Okay, nice to meet you, Mary.
Nice to meet you.
I'm conservative also, and it's important for us to come together. It's not a liberal or conservative thing. What you and Juan are discussing, and what we're discussing. Is a human thing. It's us getting bipartisan solutions, coming together and saying, hey, we need to solve this, and this is how.
Yeah.
This is true. I was looking on the internet at something that the Native American chief Sitting Bull said before he was killed by one could say law enforcement, but it was about everything being connected and that it matters. And I also can't stop thinking about when I studied the various religions in the world and realized that every religion that anybody has ever known anything about has had the same bottom line, and that's what Christians call the golden rule. Every single religion has that. And for a country that says we're one nation under God, that's
in God we trust,
pretty hypocritical, because we aren't paying any attention to that, what we should be, that it matters what you do to other people and the earth. And thank you for having this broadcast. I don't have any more preaching to do tonight.
Well, call us anytime, most definitely, and please stay on, stay on. And whenever you would like to make a comment, we have about 20 to 30 more minutes. So if you want to pop back in, let us know and make a comment or ask a question. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your last comment just gave me chills about the golden rule. That is true. Like, the president, our religious leaders, all of us, we should take a moment of silence. The protesters ask just everyone to take a moment of silence and all pray. You know, let's just stop what we're doing, whatever we're doing, protesting, burning, looting, praying. Let's take a moment of silence and pray. You know, and I more than likely we'll see some miracles happen.
Yeah.
And you make a good point. Like, our country was founded on the belief in God. So where is God? God is everywhere. So let's remember that and think
right.
about that for a moment. You know, I thought about that the other day, Saturday evening. Seems like it is a battle going on between, well, we know it is, between God and Satan. But God always wins.
Right.
So I'm, right. So the golden rule, yes. Everybody, our listeners worldwide can relate to what you just stated.
Right. If God created Satan, if God created everything, then God created
right.
Satan, right? Because he created everything.
Right.
So Satan
right.
can't beat God.
Exactly.
Right. Satan can't beat God. And it's just what God decides to allow to even, and this is, I know we're going philosophical, but what does God allow to happen or allow you to see what you're going to do? If he gave you a brain for some particular reason, he gave you a brain. He just didn't make you say, okay, he didn't make you like a regular animal where you just, a shark just eats. That's what a shark does. It didn't
right.
say, hey, I'm gonna eat you because I don't like you. The shark just says, hey,
yeah.
I'm hungry. It's time to eat. Or I'm not.
Right.
I'm not eating. Right.
Right.
That's pretty much it. It doesn't go, hey, there's a black guy. I don't like black people. I'm gonna eat that white guy. No, a shark just.
Right.
Right.
Right. Sharks and bears do not care. And alligators.
They just
do. Right.
That's what they do. So, God gave us brains and intellect, and if we
create us as highly intelligent.
Right, right. If we don't use it, then at least I believe he's just kind of looking at us like, okay, now I'm not going to give you much time here on this earth to use what I gave you. You might need to start doing something. So,
oh my goodness.
That's kind of how I look at things. The older I get, the more.
Yeah, law enforcement side, you getting ready to scare people. What is it called when you all scare when law enforcement officers like to scare people? What that documentary, scare, whatever. What you just did was scare people to thinking right. Scare straight. You're scaring us straight now. You're scaring us straight.
Yeah, straight. But
because.
So, yeah, it's quite a bit we could talk about. Let me just say that. But back to what we initially were supposed to be talking about. So we have a problem in policing, and our main problem is training, okay? That's the number one problem from my vantage point over the years, from my vantage point from traveling and even before I started working for the company that I worked for, for the last 3 years, I had my own training company where I traveled the state training officers and command staff. So I would talk to these different officers and they'd talk back to me. Cause my type of training that I do is I always have to get feedback during the class.
Right.
I need to hear what you're thinking.
Right.
And so,
yes.
so many different ideologies and philosophies to policing just in a room of police officers that work for the same organization, that work for the same city or county or state. And so it's just not one drumbeat. It's not one way of policing, one way of protecting, or one way of or serving. So, but the biggest issue that we have now, and which we saw it played out on television this past week, is training. It's training.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't, throughout the country, there's not enough training, number one. Number two, there's not enough mandated training, right?
Mm-hmm.
There should be conflict resolution, de-escalation, and then self-de-escalation training that should be mandated by the federal government. And I say federal government because when law enforcement agencies see FBI or DEA or whatever, they snap to it and stand at attention, right? They're going to do what they need to do to get their information, the stats back to the FBI for the UCR report, right? The Uniform Crime Report that goes out throughout the country every year that's done by the FBI.
Okay.
They're going to get that information out of the FBI report. And so, but by and large, at police, I did some research, and there was some research already done. I just compiled that research about police academies across the country, right? What do police officers spend the majority of their time training in at police academy? So I'm going to ask you that question. What do you think police officers spend the majority, if an officer spends 19 weeks in an academy, what do you think the majority of his or her training is about?
You know what I always thought? What you said when the solution is, I thought was trained in community relations. I thought community relations was like the overall.
Right.
I thought it was like the umbrella to the training. And that's what I thought, honestly. Someone who always was a little officer friendly, like you know, and always had a close relationship, love and respect in law enforcement.
Right, right.
I always thought community relations, because it's about the community. I always thought that the umbrella of the training was community related, but to learn the basics of how to deal with certain situations and to handle weapons. That's what I thought. What about you, Mary?
I was in the military, and I'm sitting here thinking it's probably about kill or be killed. Maybe it's about self-defense. I don't know.
What?
I know what I think is lacking, but I don't know what it is. What is it, Juan?
Yeah, what
it is
it? Oh, my God, I'm scared. Huh?
It is firearms training.
Okay.
On average, across the country, the average number of hours across the country, police officers spend at police academy 60 hours in firearms training. All right. And then
normal to pull your weapon and shoot in with your. Is that what you're saying too? You talk to firearm trainers, so pull that weapon out and use it.
So basically, the top training pretty much are all what I call physical acts. From firearms, that's the number one. Defensive tactics or fighting, if you want to. The average person would say would be fighting. They call it DTS.
Okay, that was Mary's answer.
It's a play on words. We defend ourselves rather than we don't offend. So I defend myself. So that's a great way to put it in court, right? If you're going to come towards me, I'm going to defend myself. So you would be considered the aggressor. Then next, I believe if I remember correctly, that's 51 hours. Then the next is defensive driving. I think that's around 50 hours.
Oh.
And then, yeah, so those are the big three. And then as we
okay.
go on.
Firearm training, defense tactics, and driving. Okay.
Right. We have, and as we go on, we have obviously report writing, and what you said, somewhere down the line, way down the line, between 6 and 8 hours is community relations and whatnot.
No.
DSP.
No. Please tell me you're joking. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And listeners around
now
the world.
We're talking about,
6 to 8 hours?
Yeah,
no way.
This is nationwide. I don't know about worldwide, but this is nationwide.
Okay.
Right.
So,
a male military culture.
Yeah.
Wow.
Policing is paramilitary. Policing is from the military. They call it paramilitary,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a play from
mm-hmm.
the military, it's a take from the military. And the military's primary weapon is force, enforced by a gun, a rifle, a pistol, or whatever, a missile.
Yeah.
And so anything that takes from the military or takes from anything, they're going to, their first order of duty will be whatever that thing is initially, right? If it's talking, then it would be talking. You would take from talking, but whatever entity that is. That's law enforcement. Enforce the law. Force the law.
Mm-hmm.
Enforce.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, mind you, since Ferguson and since Baltimore and since a couple of other cases, we've had an uptick in what I call cerebral training, I guess, so to speak, at police academy. You know, they've upped the number of hours for or weeks for academy training, and also upped the number of hours for de-escalation and human and cultural relations, race relations, things of that, adolescent brain development, things of that nature, right? Which is a huge
mm-hmm.
thing. Obviously, when we watch these young people on TV, most of these young people on TV, with a lot of us are thinking, man, I wouldn't do that. That's crazy. Why are they doing that? As with our adult brain, but they have a adolescent brain which is not fully developed. The human brain doesn't fully develop till around 26 or 27. I'm 54.
Right.
Mine mm-hmm. hasn't developed yet.
So, right.
So that's another thing. We're taking
right.
our brain and we're using our
my
brain.
My mother passed
reason.
Away in 2017 at 86. She loved to learn. Every day of life, she loved to learn something new. And she felt like you just said
right.
it at age 86.
Right.
She's like, every day you learn something new. You're always developing.
Yeah. I have a good friend of mine who's from there. Go ahead, Mary.
I was going to say, I think that the police academies, and in fact, all educational institutions in the United States need to teach us the effect that our emotions have on our bodies and on our thinking and on the choices that we make. And for men,
that's
a new thing, because men in our cultures have been taught to be against emotion. They don't want to be emotional. They don't want to be around emotional women. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to look at movies that are about emotion, because our culture has taught men that. But nevertheless, that man kneeling with his knee as he killed George, he had emotions that were behind his choice, and we don't know what they are, and we probably never will know what they are, because nobody will talk about that. But whether they were anger, perhaps, from some previous relationship that he had with the fellow, or just anger that has built up in his life, because it hasn't been dealt with, that kept that knee down there for 8 minutes and let him kill that man without any emotion in his face at all. And that's just one example. Police are human beings, and they have emotions, and those emotions can activate hormones and chemicals in their bodies and in their brains that allow them to become irrational and make a quick irrational choice to shoot somebody or hit somebody or begin a train of thought that isn't grounded in rationality but is grounded in emotion, which is completely denied by most men. And I know I sound like perhaps some kind of a nut, but I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have in our country, is to make people aware, to help people understand what emotions are good things, but they're not good things,
yes.
And they're not understood, or we're not capable of working with them in a rational way.
Right. Emotional intelligence. Right.
Absolutely. There
exactly.
you go.
Exactly. So all
that should be number one in the police
part.
Academy. I'm sorry. What did you
say? She said that should be number one in the police academy, teaching emotional intelligence.
It should. So now, how do you make that? The huge question is, how do you make AI number one? How do you make that number one? When you're talking about going into a profession that is viewed as being testosterone filled, and the best guy, the better I shoot, you know. And you're hearing this from a guy who started out, I bought in hook, line, and sinker through policing. I mean, I went to the, I already worked out anyway prior to going to the police academy. But I worked out even more. I became stronger, bigger, faster. I wore my gloves every day. My shades, my sunglasses, and I took on this persona. And you're talking about somebody
right.
that had a great childhood. I was not abused. I had the
right.
greatest childhood, arguably, as anybody in the world. Right? All me and my friends did was want to have fun and talk to girls. That was it.
And then I don't know if you've ever seen an image of him, model looks. I've known each other since we were teenagers. Model looks. And so when I realized he was going into law enforcement, I'm like, what, Mr. Pretty Boy? And he's doing an amazing job.
But, you know, so you transform because, you know, when you're in a, when you join an organization, it's human nature to want to belong. So you do what you're taught how to do. And so I was telling a good friend of mine this, that we came out to the academy together. When you grow in policing and you learn what you did 25 years ago wasn't quite the best thing to do, it's incumbent upon you to pour back into policing, to go back and say, hey, guys, what I did was not right. This is what the new guys should be learning in the academy. This is what the new people should be learning when they get out of the academy on the street. Because if I don't,
right.
then it's just a repetitive cycle. And that's what's been happening for you. That's what's been happening for you. The same thing being taught. If you run from us in a car chase and then you jump out of the car and you we chase you, then you're gonna tow the ass whooping. That's the culture. That was known on the street too, by the way. If they catch you, you know you're gonna
wow.
get you, what we call tapped up. Right.
Oh.
And so this is the culture. This is just what happens. Right. When nighttime
right.
comes, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, the police own the streets as far as the war between the drug dealers and the police or the violent criminals. Right. It's a whole nother
mm-hmm. right.
You transform into a whole other person about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning out on the street as a police officer dealing with really violent
people. Oh my
goodness! You transform. It's a transformation, and it's not a joke, right?
So the officer I see at lunchtime, lunchtime is a total different officer in, after midnight.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So it's from the concept of survival. It's from the concept of he or she is out to get me. It's from the concept of I have to protect. So it's all this stuff rolled into one that makes this officer. I need to protect the people who can't protect themselves. All of that is rolled into one big ball of tension and energy that can explode at any time, given the right or wrong situation. And so going through all that and then coming out, I'm not going to say unscathed, because you become scarred mentally, right? And
right.
You have to, if you end up either, when you get older, you end up either being really stressed out or being an alcoholic or having heart or, you know, interior body issues. And most cops that I know over the age of 50 have some type of major ailment, right? Mainly blood pressure.
Too many donuts.
Mm-hmm. So, but
yeah, I think that kind of change will happen, like you said, with babies. Baby steps with people like Juan speaking out, other people speaking out. It needs, that kind of teaching needs to get infiltrated into our public schools so that we raise a generation of people who have the ability to be better people because they've learned a little bit more than my generation.
Like I mentioned, how old are you?
80.
You sound amazing. Oh, wow. Because I'm right, because like I mentioned to Juan, I'm 51, a few years under him, and I have never been given that talk. Oh, when you see law enforcement run from them early at my early age as a first and second grader at Lake Elementary near the Police Academy, I was introduced to Officer Friendly. So even as a 51-year-old, I still look at the good. I know some people will get me for saying this. I still look at the good in police and law enforcement, like the officer in Minneapolis, those in Indianapolis, Baltimore, those in New York. Those are bad apples. I'm just telling you the truth. That's how. And because, because I was exposed in public school to the officer-friendly program, as a 51-year-old, I still look at, well, overall, law enforcement police officers are good. We just need to get rid of the bad apples.
So the question.
And now you're telling us we need to train. We need to train better. Now I'm finding out that there's more to it too. We need to train properly.
Mhm. And the question is, how do they become a bad apple? I mean,
it sounds like through training. It sounds like because of the training, they need to be improved training.
I mean, some of them could have been bad people prior to being hired. Some of them could have been really great people. And just, again, the culture of policing turned them. Or they turned.
Policing is horribly stressful, and it's underpaid, and it's abusive, culturally abusive to officers, at least in our country. I don't know. When I was in England, I had a different sense of the culture of policing, and so I don't know. If I were the president, I would send people to England to study what's the difference, and figure it out and come back and integrate that into the training for our officers here. It's a cultural change. It's like racism
has to
be a cultural change.
Shout out to England, too.
The anthropologist said that it took a full generation for a change to happen, and she's probably right. You have to take baby steps and be patient. which is not very easy to do.
Right, especially when we have riots going on right now. I was like, okay, what is effective speedy? What can we do? What can all of us do to
The FBI and the Minneapolis newspapers are talking about how most of these riots have been infiltrated by the, what do you call them, the white nationalist people, the Nazi lovers, or whatever they're called. I forget the right word.
Yeah. It was a NIFA or you talking about that? Because I've seen some stories too on that, on like some of these organizations. I've heard that some riots have been like pre-orchestrated too. I don't know how true those rumors are. Some of them have been like pre-planned, orchestrated. But I know one thing, seeing businesses destroyed, that's not fake news. And watching business owners fly because their entire life earnings and work have gone into a business destroying in it by looters. You know, I know that's not good. That's not good to see. And and today is the day where many states are opening back up also. In Seattle, Washington, are you all reopened yet? Or are you still on lockdown? Are some store businesses partially open?
We're still locked down. I think Washington has taken a more, to me, rational thing. I mean, viruses don't just disappear overnight.
Right.
They're pretty, pretty tricky little devils.
The rest of the country should be taking note from Washington, too, since some of the cases started in Seattle at the nursing home and in California.
Well,
it seems like the rest of the country should be taking note from Washington, too. If you all are still...
We've also been voting by mail for years.
Right. Do you know what
T-Bird there talks about it happened. it's a pretty neat thing, and that's one answer. That's part of the answer to the.
So you have been voting by mail, right? Because that's something I hope we can talk about on the next show. More politics and the voting. The voting choices that we might have. So you all have been voting by mail. Wow.
Yeah, I've lived here now for 14 years and voted by mail every time there was an election. Everybody voted by mail.
Right.
That's the way they do it.
Right.
It's a good system. We're off subject again.
it's some subjects. Everything goes hand in hand. Yes. Juan.
Yes.
Oh yes. Oh yes. We're almost out of time, and you know we really would like to elaborate. And I scheduled the show to be longer than an hour. Now we're like an hour and 15 minutes. I almost scheduled to be 90 minutes. Well, next show will definitely be longer because we sure can elaborate on what you're discussing because we both are involved in politics and the political process. And that is something that we definitely need to discuss more in depth regarding voting. And because they're thinking about what doing partial, mail-in, and in-person. And there's something with like selective voting. There's something that's been tried out regarding a preference voting, where people choose put on a ballot. Like, it's some information I have on my social media, and I would put it on the promo for the next show. You can visit No Labels. I'm a member of No Labels. It's a bipartisan organization based in D.C., and Republicans and Democrats come together. And so you go to their website and their Facebook page, you will see, and also can attend a Zoom meeting. There's a lot of things going on regarding how we might be able to vote in November.
Scares the heck out of the big T.
Yes. So I heard someone make a comment. Juan, what do you think? Someone said that these protests are not just because of humanity and what happened in Minneapolis, but because of this is an election year. What are your thoughts?
Wait, there's too much conspiracy theory for me. I mean, I just kind of deal with the issue at hand.
Right.
That I can control.
And
I have influence.
I'm like, how does somebody think of that? But, you know, someone made that comment. I don't know if it was a reporter or just someone that they interviewed, but someone made that comment. They were like, oh, this is more than already trying to take the attention off of what really happened, a man being murdered in front of everyone. Someone made that comment that, oh, this is not really about
either way,
what happened in Minneapolis. It's because of an election year.
I can do a lot about the police hiring practices. I can do a lot about,
right.
Or I can attempt to do a lot about the police training, make that mandated federally, which is something I spoke to.
Right.
I had a meeting with a legislator yesterday, and we're going
right.
to get together try to do some state stuff first, and then I neglected to mention that we're having a town hall, an internet town hall. I think we're going to do it on Zoom either this week or next week. Joe Biden's campaign manager, I think, is supposed to be on it. And we're going to talk about what we talked about mm-hmm. today and to try to.
Oh, please keep us updated and share on your social media.
Yeah. I will put it. I'm a Facebook person. I don't do much Instagram, just to. What the kids say, the old people do Facebook and the young people do Instagram. So
I know.
So yeah, I'll keep you all updated, and
we definitely be a part of the town hall meeting, and you all definitely check out No Labels. Well, I'm sure you have checked out No Labels,
yeah.
But Mary, if you're not a member of No Labels, check out No Labels. And today we have a steering committee meeting, and Wednesdays we usually have a members meeting, and we meet with legislators in Congress. We have Zoom meetings.